Impact, and we continue on talking to leaders in college football, including today, defensive coordinator at the College of Rockport, Coach Mike Fox. Coach, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate that.
Coach, you guys did an excellent job in 2017. You were number one in sacks, 4.5 sacks per game, which is pretty much double your output from the previous year. Number two in interceptions with 25. You are number three in rushing defense, holding teams to 54 yards per game. Number four in turnovers gained at 34. So you guys did a great job taking the ball away. And number five in defensive TD. So when you took it away, you guys were taking it out. 14 in red zone defense. Before we do that, let's learn a little bit more about you as a coach and talk about your background. Moving from your days as a player at St. John Fisher and then into a coach, you know, what were some of the things that, I guess, impacted you that made the choice for you that this is what I want to do as a career, this is what I want to do with my life?
Good question. I mean, I actually, you know, going through college and playing my college ball and going through my studies, I never really even thought about being a college football coach. And a couple coaches that I played for, Coach Fagiano, Coach Vosburgh at St. John Fisher, when I got done playing, you know, I was lucky enough to be chosen a captain and had a decent career. And I guess they saw something in me and they came up to me and said, hey, would you like to come back and be a coach? Would you like to come back and maybe be a GA or a student assistant? And I kind of turned it down and said, no, I wanted to go on and do this and that and start my career. And I went through the summer after my senior season and got about, you know, that couple of weeks before the season started. And I started to get the itch again. I said, hey, what the heck am I going to do with my life? I've been playing football for 15, 16 years. So I called up those coaches and said, hey, would you please have me? And kind of begged my way back on the staff. And I was lucky enough for them to take me, and I kind of volunteered for my first year and did a couple side jobs here and there and ended up just really kind of living in the office and becoming almost a full-time coach, really making no money. But I worked with a bunch of great guys that kind of mentored me along. And the next year, you know, what they call an intern job kind of opened up and they were, it was open and they hired me for 2 years and, you know, we had some success. And the defensive coordinator at that time, Coach Blaise Fagiano, ended up getting a head coaching job. And I interviewed with a few really good candidates, against a few really good candidates, guys that were coordinators at the time. And I think it was just, you know, maybe playing at the school, the relationship I had with the kids there. And Coach Vosburgh at St. John Fisher hired me to be the defensive coordinator in 2008. And, you know, just very young coordinator and a lot to learn and kind of was thrown in the fire a little bit. But, you know, and I'm still learning to this day. But I'm thankful for the opportunity that those guys gave me. And it really kind of got me on the path of where I am today.
I think you bring up a couple important points. For those young coaches out there and for those guys, you know, I get questions all the time. Coach, how do you become a college football coach? And, you know, it's not an easy process. I don't think it's an easy process really even becoming a high school coach now, you know, because like you said, you have to put in your time. You have to jump into it right away. It's not like something, you know, in this profession that you really, you know, just dip your toe in and figure it out, you know, if that's what you want to do. I mean, you have to be willing to drink out of the fire hose. You have to be willing to, you know, I tell guys all the time when former players and stuff, when they're thinking about it, is like, be willing to be poor and have a way to support yourself for a while. If you stick with it, it'll pay off.
Yes.
What's your advice to that young coach who wants to make it, step out of his role as a player and into that role as a coach?
I think you just got to be ready to sacrifice. I think, and any young guy that asks me, you know, and I say young, I hope I'm not that old. But any young guy that really wants to get into the profession, I think they see, and again, I was so fortunate to even get a full-time job as young as I was. I mean, I was one in 100 that was, you know, had that opportunity. But I, any kid that asked me, I said, you know, it, you see the full-time coaches now, and you think our life is great, which it is. You know, I'm blessed to be a college football coach. I said, but you see me now. You didn't see me back when I was driving 45 minutes to sleep on my mother's couch every single night. You know, when I'm out on the road recruiting with no cell phone and, you know, having to print off what people probably don't even know anymore, MapQuest, to kind of get around to my schools, because I didn't have a cell phone and a GPS because, you know, really I couldn't afford to pay my bill that month. And that's how I lived my life for, you know, almost a full year, kind of picking and choosing my bills, you know, eating off $20 a month. And there were plenty of times where I thought about giving it up and trying to get a real job. And, you know, people that knew me and people that, you know, loved me just told me to stick with it. And, you know, the coaches around me told me to stick with it. I'm so happy they did, but, you know, willing to make sacrifices. And so many people are just trying to get to the goal and goal and goal, and they forget about the things that you have to sacrifice and really do to get to that point. And I, trust me when I say this, and I tell all the young guys where they're looking, but just stick through it, because it's the greatest profession ever. And I really don't work a day in my life. So stick through the hard times. There's going to be times when you want to quit. There's going to be times when you want to give up. There's going to be times when you can't afford to go out on a Saturday night to the movies or whatever, but you have the longest life to live as a football coach, and it's going to be, you know, a great one.
Yeah, for those guys stepping into those kind of roles, you really have to see it as your education is really continuing, and it's getting more intense than it was before. Yep. There's not that downtime between classes. There's maybe not as much social life. Like you said, you know, financially got to sacrifice some of those things. But I think the other key, and something you were fortunate, is that you found or you were in a great place to continue that education. How important, you know, when you think about that, how important is it to find the right mentors and to find a program, you know, again, not thinking about the money, but, you know, find a program that there's some great coaches to learn from.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important, because I also know some guys that didn't quite go to in their terms, a great program or work with great guys, and it forced them out of the profession too, because, you know, they really just didn't have good experiences. So I've been at two colleges in my career, you know, and that's not a lot for coaches. You know, I know coaches that have been all over the country and, you know, gone to different programs, but I've been with two programs that, you know, have been successful, you know, fortunately for myself. And not only that, but, you know, had great people in the organization that really cared for their players and cared for the school and had a lot of pride in that. So, you know, I was very lucky to have that, you know, with both programs that I'm at. And I think it's important that, you know, you have guys around you that want to see you grow as a person, want to see you grow as a coach, and you got good people around you. I can't say how important that is.
Yeah, I agree. I've had some young coaches out there who, fortunately, you know, came to me and, what do I do? I don't like it here. Find another opportunity. There's better coaches to learn from when you hear about maybe some of the things that are going on or how a staff is treated, mm-hmm. et cetera. You also have to realize that maybe you didn't start at the right point, and just hit mm-hmm. reset. Find the right guys. You got a year under your belt or 2 years under your belt, whatever it might be. Hit reset and, you know, tighten the belt a little bit maybe, but continue that education and make sure that you're learning from the best out there. So, Coach, as you moved on from that period where, you know, you had to worry about, you know, where am I sleeping tomorrow and what bills can I pay this month? And you know, you started getting an income. You continue your development as a coach. What are some key lessons you've learned along the way that really helped you grow into the position you're in now as defensive coordinator at Brockport?
Well, I think the one thing, you know, especially from St. John Fisher, is, you know, the coaches there always did a great job of really trying to make every kid feel, you know, extremely important. You know, at the Division III level, you're always going to have more kids than maybe the Alabamas and the Ohio States of the world, just because of the way the Division III works. And in order to have a successful program, you know, without offering scholarships, you need support, and you need guys from top to bottom in your roster to really buy in and help the team however they can, whether it be scout team, whether it be cheering on from the sideline, or whether it be in an All-American. So I really learned that you need to make every kid in your program feel important and feel like their job is so vital to the success. So, you know, that's one thing I've always tried to do is, you know, especially late in the season, and try and point out kids who maybe aren't getting the pub that, you know, the starters are, and just kind of the truth. It's not that I'm just making it up, that they are just as important as, you know, everyone else, and making them feel like, you know, they're still a part of this, and that they're important to the success that we've had. And, you know, just treating them as, you know, I have a one-year-old now, as I would treat my one-year-old, and I can imagine him growing up and going through the same thing. So that's always a big step. And then for me, just personally, just being myself, you know, I've met some great coaches. I've worked with some, you know, good people and around that, but I've always just tried to be who I am. I'm a fiery guy. I get crazy sometimes and in a good way and sometimes in a bad way, but that's who I am. And I've always tried to kind of stick with what I am, but, you know, obviously mold and to the kids that we have. But those are two big things that, you know, I've learned over my years of coaching from, you know, a couple of good guys.
I think you really emphasized the point there about the relationships. You know, at the Division III level, you know, I was a similar situation at Baldwin Wallace University, where we're bringing in, you know, a class of, you know, 90 freshmen. And and we know, you know, as part of the game, we know there's going to be some attrition there.
Yep.
But, you know, the biggest thing is once we had those kids in the program, whether you see them as someone who are going to work out long term or not, you have an opportunity to mentor young people. So it can't be just about what can you give me on the field. Obviously, I always felt the accountability, like, I brought you here. I need to make this a positive experience. Maybe you leave the program, but, you know, I brought you to a good place where you can get your education. You're appreciative for that. And even the guys who left out, you know, I was able to keep touch and see them around campus and talk to them and see how things are going. And I think that applies to the high school level as well. We get these kids in, we never know how they're going to, you know, grow over the course of their career. You're going to have those late bloomers, whatever it might be. But again, they're in your program. It's an opportunity to use this great game as a vehicle to make them better people.
I completely agree, because, you know, through the recruiting process, you know, you're talking to 17, 18-year-olds, and they're very impressionable. And up until this point of their life, you know, choosing a college is the biggest choice they're going to make in their entire life. And we have a big part of that. And you know, I don't know, you know, sometimes we are the reason, sometimes we're not, sometimes it's different reasons, whether it be major or money or whatnot. But, you know, we know that the coach recruiting them is usually a good chunk of, hey, maybe this is why the reason that this kid's choosing that school. So that is a great sense of responsibility on a coach, you know, that a young man has chosen to come play under you, play for your program, get the education at your school. And you owe it to that young man to treat him well, and make sure that, just like you said, he's got a positive experience when he leaves. And I'm always the proudest. You know, any kid who started for me and had success, it's easy for him to come back and say, "Coach, I had such a great year, you know, coaching for you or playing for you. And, you know, it was such a blast." That's the easy ones. It's the guys who maybe were third string or backups that never really got a lot of playing time. And they're the ones that, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, shoot you a text and say, "Hey, coach, man, I miss you. You know, what's going on?" Those are the ones that I love, because that means you had some type of good impact on that kid. And it wasn't just because you started them. It was because of how you interacted with them and how you helped maybe, you know, build and mature him as a young man.
Yes, coach. And you know, part of that, then we got to move that relationship onto the field, and kind of that space between getting on the field and doing things right is the opportunities we have off field with them at the NCAA level. You know, we got the 20-hour rule, but with life as it is for most people, I think, you know, 20 hours is a lot of time, and a high school probably has even less time to meet and work with,
sure,
the players off the field.
Sure.
So what are some of the best things you're doing to use that time efficiently and to teach the game, to make sure when they get on the field, they can play fast? And, you know, I think technology obviously has played a big impact on that too. So maybe talk about, you know, the technology you're using and what you guys are doing in those classrooms and those walkthroughs and whatever other types of things you do to help your players learn.
You know, this may sound crazy, but me personally, I've just started to use Huddle the last few years, you know, before we were DV Sport. And Huddle is just, it's absolutely amazing. You know, I used to always go back and watch the practice film with our kids and watch every single play and go through every play. And you're just kind of wasting mundane time. And and whatnot. And now I'll go. The first thing I do every morning is when I get up and get into work, I watch the practice film, you know, or, you know, a cut up of whatever we're going to be really focusing on for that day. I'll write my notes. And we get to our meetings before practice, and we only meet for 35 minutes at the most, you know, before practice. And we'll go through the notes, you know, and most of our kids, we've sent it out to them in the morning. And a lot of our kids are on their cell phones, maybe watching it and reading the notes or whatnot. And then we'll just hammer home the notes that we've taken. And this way we get through practice in 5 or 10 minutes and really just kind of hammer home on the corrections that we need to make. And now our scouting reports are all on Huddle as well. So as we break down an offense and we go top personnel, top run, top pass, and et cetera, things like that, it's all there. It's all on Huddle. It's very easily accessible. You know, we're not flipping from page to page on a handout. And all these kids, they all have it on their phones. They have it on their iPads, you know, all that stuff. So Huddle for us has been great, you know, as far as just streamlining the information that we're trying to give the kids. And it's really saved a ton of time. So we're a big practice film watching team before practice, you know, and as far as watching what we're doing, because I always treat practice as kind of a mini game, you know, let's make our corrections in practice before we hit the field on Saturday.
Absolutely. Coach, and I guess streamlining that process for your coaches and thinking of your defensive staff, how do you to break that up so that, you know, that's not all falling on one guy to just be the tech guy? Because I've seen those situations before, you know, when you adopt a certain technology early on and you make one guy responsible for it and then everybody kind of throws stuff at him. How does everybody take part in putting that together and making sure that that process is streamlined?
Yeah, so there's three of us that are in the office, myself and two other guys. We have, you know, our linebacker guy and then our DB guy, and then I coach the D-line. So as far as breaking down, you know, an opponent, the next opponent's game, our DB guy will go in and do all the pass routes, you know, the pass route combinations, where they're throwing it on the field, what field zone. He'll do the formations, any motions, you know, things like that, and he's going to input all that formation. Our linebacker guy is going to go in and do all the run game. He's going to do the backfield sets. He's going to do all the down and distance, you know, the games, things like that. So they'll break up the game, you know, as far as that goes, which is pretty easy. And then practice-wise, it goes the same thing. So we input all of our calls in practice. So we're not looking back at a call sheet and, you know, hey, in practice we're running this play, but again, our DB coach will install all the coverages and put it right on our Huddle. And our linebacker guy will put in all the fronts and all of our stunts and blitzes for practice. This way we have it up on the screen and we can go from there. You know, scouting report, that's kind of a whole different deal. But that's kind of how we run as far as the film breakdown for both sides.
Coach, is there any kind of quiz or accountability or anything you do throughout the course of the week or end of the week with your players?
Thursday is quiz day, absolutely. So I make every, you know, I run the defensive line. And you know, I really believe that position coach kind of goes with their position. Our DB's guy, we have two defensive back coaches. One is a part-time guy and the other one's a GA. So he'll take all the DBs. Our linebacker coach will take both our outside and inside linebackers, and I'll take the D-line. And we don't have a set quiz that we give every week. The reason that is because I don't want just our kids knowing what they have to study each and every week. But I'll put my starting defensive line up there. And the one thing they know they're going to get every week is if you're a defensive end, tell me the two tackles. You know, tell me their top two run plays and tell me what you think about them and what's your number one pass rush move against them. So those are three things that we ask every single week. You know, they need to know the number, the height, the weight, you know, where they're from, name. What's the number one pass rush you're going to move? You're going to work against that guy if you're defensive end on the tackle, and then their top two run plays that you're going to see, you know, and then what kind of blocks you're going to see off that. So that's real simple. The kids know it each and every week. And then for our defensive line, since they're the big guys, I like to, you know, I'll throw in, hey, what's the quarterback's name? What's the backup quarterback's number? You know, who's their running back? Who's their fullback? What, you know, just something different personnel wise. So, you know, just to make sure that they're really kind of watching it all and not just maybe focusing on, you know, what they're doing, because we try and do a good job of teaching everyone formations. And that's the first thing that we teach across the defenses. You have to know all the formations, whether you're a defensive lineman, safety, corner, linebacker. The first thing you'll know in our program is all the formations of an offense. So if there needs to be a checker and like that, everyone's on the same page. And it's very similar to, you know, linebackers. Hey, what are the top two run plays that you're going to see? Okay. Tell me something that you're seeing from the offensive line, you know, that you can identify a run pass. And then obviously, you know, personnel is always a big thing for us. And I kind of leave that up to the position coaches each and every week to kind of, you know, do on their own. For our corners, we're big on, you know, just finding the releases of the receivers. You know, are they going to stem the inside? Are they going to stem the outside when they run a post or a corner? You know, what is their stem tendencies? Because I do believe each and every receiver is going to have that. And then alignment. We're always talking about inside the numbers, outside the numbers. You know, feet inside the number, yards inside the numbers. You know, if they're inside the numbers, what are they going to run? If they're outside numbers, what are they going to run? If they're on the numbers, what are they going to run? And then any tendencies, you know, as far as yardage inside the numbers. And they need to come up with that each and every week. Those are kind of staples, you know, what we try and get across on our kids, and we'll quiz them on Thursdays.
Yeah, giving those guys, like, those keys, those details, you know, is very important in making sure they understand. I mean, we could share all the playlists, you know, we could think of, but if they don't understand some of those key points, they're not going to necessarily have that success you want them to have on game day, that it's sharing out some mm-hmm. of those things as well. So definitely appreciate that. Well, Coach, you guys have a great leadership within your program, starting with the coaches. Coach Jason Mangone was the Division III Coach of the Year, AFCA, just awarded him that this week. And obviously you guys have a strong culture, but, you know, ultimately, you know, the head coach is going to set that and provide the leadership with that. You know, the coordinators and the assistant coaches have to go out and execute it. So what are you guys doing to really build off of that culture and leadership that you're trying to build within your team and implement that on the defensive side of the ball?
I mean, just like you said, it starts with our head coach, and he's just an unbelievable guy to work for. He's an unbelievable person. He is one of the things that attracted me to Brockport when I made the move over was him. And just I consider myself just extremely competitive, you know, ultra competitive when it comes to, you know, anything, playing racquetball, doing anything. And this man is more competitive than I am. And I saw that from, you know, from the other sidelines going against him. And the best thing about him, and he says this to our players, is, hey, I'll never ask you to do something I'm not willing to do myself. And whether it's a recruit on campus, he's the first one to greet him. He's the first one to tour him around. He takes control. He does everything, you know, and when you have a guy like that who's willing to put the work in himself, you can't help but want to work for him. And the same thing with our players. He gets in the weight room with our kids in the off season, and he'll get in there and, you know, he works out to a T, whether it be squatting, deadlifting, benching, actually doing the sprint work with our kids. And, you know, he's with our starting center who benches, I don't know, 400 pounds, and he's right there after him. Now, he's not benching 400 pounds, but he's getting the sets in with him. So I'm very similar in that way, where I try and do the same thing with our kids. You know, I can't ask for our kids to be energized if I'm not energized, whether it be a meeting, whether it be practice, you know. So it starts from the top down with him. I like to have one-on-one meetings with our kids on defense, and I did this last year, in the last couple of years, and it's important for you to set each and every kid up with, you know, in their role, because I think some kids are leaders, and I don't know if they know that they're leaders or know if that's their responsibility. I think in any world, and especially now, kids are so worried about themselves, they're so worried about what they have going on in their life. I think they need to be updated, and they need to be told or kind of push and say, hey, you're good enough, you know, you're smart enough, you are a leader, people look up to you, you need to lead. And they kind of look at you like, wow, you know, coach, I would never thought of that. You know what I mean? So I think it's important to meet with your kids one-on-one, and especially your seniors or your upperclassmen, guys that maybe have some experience, or guys that, you know, the other guys really respect, and really kind of push them to be a leader. We have meetings every Friday with just our defense. You know, after our walkthrough, we get together, and the first and foremost thing is I don't say a word. You know, it's on our kids to get up there individually and speak. And we have some kids in our program, you know, on defense that, you know, are a little shy, a little introverted. And it was just amazing to kind of see them throughout the season, each and every work kind of build their way up. And by the end of the season, they're giving unbelievable speeches. And really, I believe it translates onto the field. You know, if they can get in a small group and talk to their defensive unit and, you know, whatever it be, words of wisdom, whatever they want to share, whether it be life or about football, I think it's amazing to see it translate in the field, give them more confidence to be a leader and to step up, you know, in times of turmoil or whatever on the field. So those are a couple of things that we do. I believe the Friday meetings have been great for us, and you get to hear from a lot of other guys, not just myself and the other coaches.
Well, Coach, you get all that going off the field. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on the field. And, you know, first of all, give us an overview of the defense you're running. I know defenses today are very multiple, but what starts your teaching? What's the base?
We're a 3-4 defense. So this is kind of our first year transitioning to the 3-4. The last year prior, my first year at Brockport, we were a 4-man front. We were a 4-2-5, you know, a quarters defense, very basic, very blah, you know, get lined up, play football. Prior to my time at Brockport, I was at St. John Fisher, and for a very long time, I ran the 3-3 stack. So me personally, I'm definitely a 3-man front guy. You know, that's what I'm comfortable teaching. That's kind of matches my personality, matches, you know, I like to be very, very aggressive from the defensive side. I like to put pressure on the offense, and I believe you can do that at 3-man front. So we kind of, when I came over, our head coach really wanted to be in a 4-man front, and our strength as a defense was our defensive line, and that was where we needed to go at that point. And then, you know, we looked at things in the off season and where our strengths were, and we implemented the 3-4, and I believe it was a good change for our guys, and it allowed them to be a little bit more aggressive.
Coach, you obviously were aggressive in, you know, you led the country in sacks for number one. You guys are number one in sacks. You're also really good at tackle for loss, and I think any time, obviously, you put the offense behind schedule, the defense is at an advantage in getting off the field. So talk to us first about, you know, the way you guys go about creating those pressures that lead to the quarterback on the ground.
Well, to be honest, you know, sacks have never been a huge stat that I've always been big on, to be honest with you. You know, it just kind of worked out that we had an unbelievable year as far as, you know, our sack total. But for us, first and foremost, the first thing I needed to do at Brockport, you know, before I got there, and, you know, we played against Brockport. It was Brockport defense had always kind of been very good against the pass, you know, and not so great against the run. I believe, you know, they were in the 200s somewhere in total rush defense. And when I got there, I said, hey, we need to fix that. You know, we have to be able to stop the run. That is the number one priority. And the first year we did that, I believe we were somewhere in the top 10, top 15 in the country in run. Now, we had a lot of work to do on kind of getting some pass rush and coverage in the back end. That was not our strength. But I truly believe that being aggressive on the defensive side of the ball, whether it be a 4-man front, 3-man front, aggressive to stop the run. Now, when we first install our defense, we're a 5-man pressure defense. Mm-hmm. Day one, that's what we install. But we install it to stop the run. So we don't necessarily teach our kids to blitz as far as just getting to the quarterback. In a 3-man front, we teach our guys to blitz to become a fourth or a fifth down lineman. And off of that, when you bring some pressure and you bring five, you know, probably for us almost 70% of the time, play action, you know, drop back pass, some of those times it's going to create those sacks that we had, you know. So for us, it really starts with just the run, you know, stopping the run and being good up front with our front seven. And those kind of sacks just kind of came along with that.
Yeah, and you guys were number three in rushing D, holding teams to 54 yards per game. So you could see where that translates. But obviously now on the back end, you're doing some things right too. You guys had 25 interceptions, which was number two in the nation in 2017. So on the back end of what is a very aggressive front, what are you guys doing there to take the ball away?
So we transitioned from a quarter defense to really a cover three base, you know, and I'm a real big fan of, you know, cover three, whether it be, you know, just good old, as Nick Saban calls it, country cover three, or, you know, a three match that, you know, we kind of was our base this year, a little bit more matchup on the four vertical concepts. But the greatest thing about the zone coverage is really just getting your eyes on the quarterback. And we have some unbelievable football players that, you know, do a great job of that. And that was a hard transition from, you know, quarters concepts being much more route combination oriented, reading routes, you know, reacting to routes, to really just playing a true, whether it be spot drop or matchup zone, of really getting your eyes to the quarterback. So I truly believe if you get your eyes on the quarterback, and have great eye discipline, those, if you have good enough football players like we do, those interceptions will come. You know, and that being, you know, paired with being aggressive up front can lead to some bad passes or some hurried passes, and maybe not getting to your first and second read, and maybe throwing some hot combinations that, you know, maybe you're it's a little too quick for the eyes of the quarterback. And that just really worked out. And we have you know, a couple guys in the back end that are really ball hawks. So really the credit goes to those guys of really doing a good job of reading the quarterback's eyes and really finishing those interceptions.
And speaking of finishing those interceptions, you guys do a good job of getting those into the end zone. I don't think any great coach who's able to bring his team to the top leaves anything to chance. So what do you guys do to, I guess, turn into offensive players once you have the ball? You know, how has that worked out that everybody starts working to get that ball into the end zone?
I wish I could take credit for that. I really do. And I'll be very honest on this podcast. We have one unbelievable safety who probably should be like a running back or a receiver. But when this kid gets the ball in his hands, I believe, you know, I don't know off the top of that my head, I haven't looked it back at everything, but I believe he had four interceptions for touchdowns this year. Last year, I believe he had five. He is unbelievable. With Jake O'Connell, he's one of our safeties. He was an All-American, and he gets the ball in his hands, and boy, he is special to watch. You know, one thing that we do as far as just turnovers in general, and this is really hammered home in preseason camp or spring ball, is we have a competition. So we have a turnover competition. So each and every day, our kids, they go out to practice, and they need to get five turnovers. And whether it be an interception, whether it be a forced fumble, we have a bunch of different rules that we have for all the different periods, which I could definitely go over if you wanted. You know, whether it be one-on-ones, wide receiver DBs, you know, two interceptions counts as one. You know, if they catch the ball, the wide receiver catches the ball, and the DB, you know, we teach them, hey, finish, come strip it, come punch it out. And if they can recover, that counts as one as well. So we're required to get five turnovers each and every practice. And for everyone under five, the whole defense will do an up down, a 50-yard sprint up down every five. You know, for each one, we get under five. Now, if that doesn't create some competition and some willingness to try and get those turnovers during practice, you know, I don't know what will, but our kids, they really take a lot of pride in it. And maybe more importantly, they just don't want to do the running after practice. But it's been great for us. And the one thing it's really done is it's kept practice competitive. It's kept our kids in it. You hear our kids on the sideline. They have this chant. They call it yard sale. So if the whole sideline chants yard sale at the same time, and while that's going on, while that certain play is going on, you know, you get a yard sale, you usually get a discount on some things, maybe a buy one, get one. If they get an interception, a forced fumble or anything during that time of that chant, it'll count as two. So it keeps practice exciting for our guys. And then as an offensive player, you don't want to be the guy to throw the interception or fumble the football, especially when they're doing that yard sale chant. So it keeps our guys into practice. It really emphasizes our kids trying to attack the football. That's something we always talk about, attacking the football, whether it be in the air, whether it be, you know, in the hands of a running back, wide receiver. And I think that's, we've always done that, and that's always, you know, been very good for our kids, and it's keep them locked in. But, you know, in our pursuit drill, one thing that we do, we do pursuit every day. I mean, we're going and playing in the national semifinals. And the first thing we do on a Tuesday, our kids get right lined up and we do pursuit. And we'll do a run pursuit. And then the second thing we do is a pass pursuit. And, you know, we'll get into a call. We'll get into basically a zone drop. I'll throw the ball, you know, maybe up to a corner linebacker safety. Everyone runs to the ball carrier. And then they'll corral him and they'll kind of corral him down the near sideline to the end zone. So maybe that helps our kids, you know, get into great blocking lanes, you know, after the interception. So maybe that helps. But again, I can't really take a lot of credit, especially when we've got a guy like Jake O'Connell back there who has done an unbelievable job for us.
Coach, the last area of your defense I'd like to talk about is, you know, that side of keeping them out of the end zone. You guys were 14th in the nation in red zone defense, number 17 in the nation scoring D, holding your opponents to 14.1. So you guys do a great job just keeping them out of there. And obviously when they do get the chance, when they do pop into the red zone, you guys find a way to shut them down. What are some of the keys to keeping teams out of the end zone, especially as they draw closer to it?
I think the emphasis still stays on, you know, you got to be able to stop the run. You know, we take a lot of pride in not letting up a rushing defense, a rushing touchdown. So, you know, the first priority of our first set of red zone or goal line that we'll do will be all run or boot play actions. We'll kind of stay away from the passes. So we really focus on all their top formations, you know, in the run game, and then off of that, all their play actions. And that's been our emphasis. We're gonna try and, you know, whether low up the box and, you know, goal line, we'll get out of our 3-4 a little bit depending on the personnel. We'll go to a 5 or sometimes maybe even a 6-man front, not often. But that's really the only time I like to get out of the 3-4 is down by the goal line. But our emphasis is still stopping the run, and we take a lot of pride in not, you know, letting the team hand the football off and cross that goal line. Pass-wise, I think – as a little bit opposite, I spoke to you before about really getting our eyes on the quarterback and really kind of, we definitely teach more of a spot dropping mentality and eyes on the quarterback. We're down in the red zone, down really 10 yards and in. And for me, I only categorize the red zone as a 13 yard and in. That's it for me. Mm-hmm. Anything past that, you know, up to the 25, I don't really count as a red zone because over the time, I just don't see as many things changing for offenses. And I believe when your alignment changes as a DB, whether it be safety, whether it be corner, if you need to snug your alignment or you need to tighten up your alignment, that's when things change for us, and that's what we call the red zone. I believe being real physical with wide receivers. You know, the greatest thing about college football is you can be real physical with wide receivers. So we get out of more of a spot drop, eyes on the quarterback, to more of a, I guess you would say, a matchup, real physical on wide receivers, really taking away the inside throwing lanes, making them throw it to the outside, those tougher throws, and really concentrate and being real physical and disrupting the timing of the routes because there's so many mesh concepts and 3-to-a-side, 4-to-a-side when you get down the red zone. I believe it's really important to disrupt the timing of routes and get them off, you know, their timing.
Coach, when you take a look at all the things you guys do, we've talked about, you know, the recruiting, the teaching you do off the field, the building of the culture, weight room, the things you do in your playbook practice, all those things, you have to pick one. What's the one thing you would point to that really gives your team the winning edge?
I think it's going to sound really cliche, you know, but I believe our head coach does an unbelievable job of recruiting. And I'd be remiss to say that, you know, I don't make perfect play calls all the time. Probably barely ever. But, you know, our kids make us as coaches look really good. And when you can recruit great football players and, you know, we have some good facilities and great kids that can sell our program and a family atmosphere, I truly believe that's the difference, you know, with our program right now. You know, as our head coach took over a few years back and kind of got rid of some kids that liked football but didn't really love football, and we've grown and recruited and got some kids that really love the game both in season and out of season. And you ask any kid, it's the family atmosphere that we have in our team that, you know, really was the difference in this year's success. You know, our kids are like family, and when you have family and when you can pull the family, you know, on the football field, it's always going to trump any X's and O's in scheme. I truly believe that.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time here for our listeners. Share with them how they can connect with you.
Email, call the office. So my email is mifox@brockport.edu. That's mifox@brockport.edu. My Twitter is CoachMFox1. So anytime, our doors are always open if anyone ever wanted to come talk football. And you know, the one thing you're going to get from me is if you talk football to me, is I'm probably going to ask you just as many questions as you ask me. So I'm always trying to get information from other people as well, because I've learned from a lot of people, and I am still learning a ton, you know, all the time. That's the greatest thing about this profession. So Twitter, email, and if there's anything I can ever do for anyone, please let me know.
Coach, it was great to have you on the podcast. Thank you for all the great ideas you share with our listeners today. I know sitting on this end, I've learned some things today, so I know there's some value for our listeners as well. And continue the great stuff you guys are doing at Brockport. Best of luck in 2018.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.